Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to be with you again, as always, over these many, many years. I think we're now on our 545th or 46th show. Who knows? But a lot of shows that we have spent with you on all kinds of topics. And I'm not going to go through the financially fit with you today because you know what that means. You know what I'm looking for. Spending less, saving more. And making sure you have survival and the emergency funds available. You know the deal. But I am going to do something today a little bit different because this show is about our veterans. I had the pleasure last week or so of going to a gala for veterans, so the Veterans Center. The American Veterans Center did its annual event for Veterans Day. And I was part of it in terms of dealing with folks who were young kids, for most purpose, all of them younger than me, in military, in uniform, some active, some in school. And I was, as I sat there and looked at these faces, I realized these young people are so willing to serve their country and so so dedicated to it. And I also realized that some of them I might see today and I would never see again because they could lose their lives in Afghanistan or wherever we may be fighting the war, whether it's in Africa or it's in the Middle East. It doesn't make any difference. What does make a difference is that these are American lives, sons and daughters who are willing to do what their fathers have done and their brothers, and they have example or maybe no one except that they feel dedicated to the cause. And it reminded me that it was important for me to take a more active role as a host of this program. And thus I called my mind as to people that were important or impressive to me. And the two people I have in studio today are very, very important and impressive to me. Veterans is about remembering, a special day for our veterans. And not everybody has the pleasure of knowing what happened to his or her husband or wife or father or brother or mother. We have what is called MIAs, missing in action or killed in action, if you will. And it, as it turns out, fate and purely fate has brought me to two people that both do it, but from a different point of view. One is an operational. He's an Air Force retired colonel, lieutenant colonel. He used to fly jets around and still flies them. He can still hear it in his voice as he's zooming off doing stuff. He has stories to tell. It's just wonderful from the operational point of view. And he's concerned about missing in action and we'll share that with you today. The other is diplomatic. His role was quite different in terms of how he approached this issue of missing in action and a war, but just as impressive. And so I asked them to come together to meet me here in studio today. Let's talk about Veterans Day from their point of view, purely from their point of view. What is important is that we remind you of why we have a Veterans Day. And these two gentlemen can explain that better than anybody else I know. So I'm going to ask them both to give – and by the way, I've got their resumes here. I got two books here. They're not resumes. They're books, folks, that could take forever. I'm going to ask each one, as I introduce them to you, to tell you what is important to them. I'll start with the ambassador. And that's the last time you'll hear me say that because this is not about title. It's all about you. It's about – the jobs that you're going to do and that you are doing. But Ambassador Charles Ray is with us, and he is not an ambassador for just one country. It's more than that. Charles, talk to us about – just tell us who you are and what you've done.
Okay. I served as ambassador to Cambodia, and then my last government service was as ambassador to Zimbabwe. But I think in terms of Veterans Day, what's important is that I spent 20 years in the U.S. Army, two of those years were spent in Vietnam during the war, both in intelligence-related activities. And I also spent 3 years at the Department of Defense as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Prisoners of War Missing Personnel, and Director of the Defense Prisoner of War Missing Personnel Office. Mm-hmm. And so I guess you could say a large part of my career, both in the military and later after I retired from the Army and joined the U.S. Foreign Service working for the State Department, intersected with the whole question of what we should be doing about those people who did not return from their overseas combat deployment. And oh, by the way, I mean, the term MIA gets used a lot, and it has a very specific meaning, actually. If you look at the documents related to it, the term that I used in my work was people that we've not accounted for, or those, you know, and that includes those who we know they probably were killed, but we weren't able to retrieve the body
or to prove it.
And so that,
all right, let me get our Air Force colonel, our flyboy, as we used to call him in the Air Force, in here, because if you ask him about Monkey Mountain, he can do an hour on his concern about fellow military people that are still missing today. And he's as passionate about it today as he was when he started, or when he started flying over there in Vietnam. We are pleased to have William R. Peterson as a retired Air Force. Please talk to us about what you did and what's important to you.
Thank you, Paul. My friends and my colleagues at the Thailand, Laos, Cambodia Brotherhood call me Willie Pete, a nickname I earned in Vietnam. If you know what Willie Pete rockets are, that's kind of the way I work. At any rate, thank you for asking me to come in today. I started in 1965 as a student at Miami University, Oxford, Ohio, and Tonkin Gulf happened, and through the ROTC program, I became an officer in the Air Force. I volunteered for Vietnam the same week I graduated from college, and within 10 days, I married my wife of 52 years. So we have a career that very soon went to Vietnam, and I went to Monkey Mountain. Monkey Mountain is 6 miles outside of Da Nang. That is the location of the Tactical Air Control Center, which does the out-country war. So whereas part of the mountain did the in-country war, providing direct air support, close air support for troops on the ground, troops in contact, our part of it was involved in the air war in North Vietnam and North and South Laos.
All right, we're gonna bring those experiences together and talk about them. Two people eminently qualified to share these moments, and I think we'll all learn from them. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
Now, my guest, retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel William R. Peterson, and former ambassador to both Cambodia and Zimbabwe, Charles Ray. Both have their own particular approaches to what they did in the war, but they were in the war, folks, and both of them are concerned about what is really the purpose of our show, is to remember those who were missing in action. Not everybody can say to you that the war is over. It isn't for them. If a loved one is missing, if there's no record of what happened to them, imagine that. And that's what drives you, I know, Bill. You're concerned about those people who you don't know where they are, what happened to them.
We had control of the war in North Vietnam, and one thing that you have to do up there is get some more radar coverage. The Air Force put in a covert operation atop a mountain in Laos called Phu Pha Chi, This is an example where the wives were brought to Bolling Air Force Base in Washington. They were briefed on the mission. They signed non-disclosure agreements, and the boys went off to war with the idea that they would be in good hands, they would be brought home safe, and promises were made that could never be kept. And out of the 16 people, when the site was overrun, we had one who was killed in a helicopter by Air America, came in out of nowhere and saved the day. And he was given the Medal of Honor in the White House in September 2010. This mission was top secret until many years after the war. So here are people who have experienced grief like you and I have never experienced. We've all lost somebody in our families. But when we say MIA, some of these people have missed their husbands and their fathers for 50 years. They still don't know what happened to them, and their grief is every day. And this happens in every war.
It's an unfortunate part of war. I guess the question is, we know it's going to happen. We know it will happen. It has happened in the Vietnam War, in World War II, in the Korean War. But have we done everything that we can do as a country? And that might be unfair, Mr. Ambassador, but you played a role in the diplomatic aspects of this. Did we do everything that we could do?
I actually played more than just a diplomatic role. I also played an operational role, as I was responsible for running the office that oversaw the effort.
And let me just say to folks, we're not just talking about he's a talker. You were a soldier. You were
yes,
there on the ground.
I spent 20 years in uniform, two of those years in Vietnam, yes. And I did get to see the war in Vietnam, in Laos, and in Cambodia rather up close and personal. But going back to the issue of have we done enough? I mean, that's a really difficult question to answer, because if you are a family whose
missing
family member is still unaccounted for, until that accounting happens, there will never be
enough.
We haven't done enough.
All right, let me stop you, because we're going to take a break here, and we'll come right back. We're going to talk about that and talk about other things that are that you think are important on your mind. We are all three veterans of Vietnam, so we have a right to the discussion, and I'm going to learn from you. We'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance on this very special program as we look to our veterans. As you probably know, I think I've told you over the years, we are carried by the American Forces Radio Network. We are on every facility, every military facility, every week worldwide. And to all of the airmen and Air Force, the Army, the Marines, the Navy, the Coast Guard, who have I left out, gentlemen? Somebody, one of them. But if I've left you out, it's only because I'm getting old. I can't remember all the things I could remember. But you get the point. And the idea here is we celebrate you. We thank you for your service. And we remember this day as a very special day. The question that I've raised to my guest today, Charles Ray, former ambassador to Cambodia and to Zimbabwe, and also a gentleman who worked very hard on the missing in action positions that he was assigned to. And then Lieutenant Colonel William Peterson, retired, who still today is working hard trying to find people that are still missing, so that he can't forget the loved ones out there. So the question is, have we done enough? Are we doing everything we can do? Bill?
There are too many out there. There's about 80,000 or so that are still missing from all the wars. And of those, only 1,606 are from Vietnam. So as a matter of perspective, you might say Vietnam is minor, but Vietnam has been driving the budget for finding MIAs and finding out what happened to POWs. But the government is trying to find it out for all of those families. The families, it doesn't matter which war you lost them in, you know, they all mean something to that. You asked a question earlier, and I'm addressing now to Charles. You know, why are things so difficult for us to get information for the families? And there are quite a few reasons. Some of the most important reasons, I'm going to talk to Vietnam specifically. Wartime policies by the Vietnam government meant that some of the general officers, the colonels and so on, buried people where they could be found. It was in their interests as a nation, and it was also a moral thing for them to do, and they did it. We had enemy generals actually bury our troops in a way that could be found and later identified. Some did not, and those are the problem areas. In line with that, you have places that are just off limits. There are places today where you can't go for whatever reason, but their government won't let us go inspect. The cost of inspecting, in one case I'm familiar with, in northern Laos, was costing $700,000 per trip. And most of that was because they got to decide what helicopters we used, and somebody was making a lot of money. But we had to go. And then it's just that you will find good people in uniform on both sides of any war. Mm-hmm. And those good people are trying to help. What you see, as far as I know, in Vietnam today, it's better than it has been in many years. They are coming closer to helping us right. do our mission.
So Charles, why would anybody 50 years later not do everything they could? I mean, what's the secret here? What are we hiding? Who's afraid to tell us what? I don't get that.
I don't really think that it's because anyone's afraid to talk. And again, I was inside the bureaucracy for half a century, which is probably far too long. And what I saw, going back to your first question, have we done enough? I mean, clearly the answer is we could do more. We could always do more. There are times when I think we have gone that extra mile, and then there are other times when I think the bureaucracy has just been bureaucratic. And in fact, my own response to a lot of these problems is that is, in fact, what the problem is bureaucracy. I mean, you know, the definition of bureaucracy is that it keeps you from doing unfortunate things or the wrong things. But the problem with bureaucracy is it keeps you from doing just about anything. And when you add to the normal bureaucratic red tape that you will encounter in any bureaucracy, the foreign policy issues, different cultures in different countries, and the different agendas that politicians bring to any issue, it just complicates it more. I mean, the my own view is, you know, why are we even doing this? I mean, this is actually something that really didn't become an issue until after World War One. I mean, in previous wars, people were often buried where they fell. I mean, our own Civil War, I mean, people were buried where they fell. You had quite a large number of people who, I mean, their families never knew. And that's unfortunate. World War II, it happened a lot, especially with a lot of the at-sea losses.
Okay, let me stop you there. Just a minute. Let me stop and pay the bill here. And we'll come back because I want to hear more. I hear you. We're talking about Veterans Day. With two veterans. We'll be right back.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And to our military members who are serving in some capacity all over the world, including here in the United States, we thank you for your service. And this show is dedicated to you, to our concerns about you, to our love for you, and our appreciation of what you do. What we're talking about is history, to some degree. And you call it history if you don't have a loved one missing. If you do have a loved one missing, you call it right now. It's not history. It's happening in your life right now, that kind of grief. My question to Charles Ray and to William Peterson, both veterans, is are we doing everything we can and should do to find those who are still missing? The war is still going on for any family member who has somebody missing in their life. It's still going on. And today is not just another day. Today is another day of grief and aggravation. Charles, you knew that when you took the job and head of this missing bureau, and you've talked about the fact that a bureaucracy often got in the way. Where are we today, from your perspective?
Well, we still have the bureaucracy, unfortunately. It waxes and wanes. I think that the important thing, and this is very difficult in a in a bureaucracy, especially a political bureaucracy, is to have people who get up every day and never forget why we should do this. I often address that question during my time at the Defense Department with families, with the press. You know, why do we do this? Well, you know, there are a number of reasons. One, it's when we take young men and women and send them abroad and put them in harm's way, the least we owe them is to try and get them back home in whatever condition they're in. I mean, you know, a war is an incredibly expensive undertaking. I mean, I forget the cost of the Iraq War, but it was millions per day. So at least if we can spend millions per day to put people in harm's way, we can spend the few million per year it takes to bring them home.
Bill, that's exactly your point. That's where you are in all this. And you're frustrated because you say we're not willing to do that.
I'm frustrated because Charles says bureaucracy, but let me define it in several ways. One thing with regard to today's world is what is called the McCain restriction. Senator McCain, in trying to create an environment where a POW, MIA family could have privacy, they were given a choice. Do you want your information that we find for you to be made public, or do you want to keep it private within your family? And a large number of people.
I say I want it private. That's what I would say. Is that what a large number of people do?
Yeah, that's exactly the wrong thing to say.
Well, it may be the wrong thing to say, but human being, I'm a human being, and if somebody comes and say to me, it's my family business, keep it. I agree with it. I'm not suggesting that it should be that way, but I understand why it is.
And so three guys go out on patrol, and they go missing. And one family member says, no, I don't want anything out there. This is private. This is my family. And the other two families are saying, wait a minute, if we find something on a trail that is somebody's dog tag, you don't want to know about that? Well, of course I want to know. Well, you're not letting us know. You're keeping everything private. So one of the problems we have today is the McCain privacy restriction.
Okay.
Second thing is security classifications. Now, you would think that 50 years or so after the war that – it would be downgraded, it would be declassified if it's top secret, and every 12 years you go down to secret, you go down to confidential, go down to unclassified. So in 36 years, we ought to have all of this information out there. We don't.
Why?
We don't because some of it is special. I understand that. I worked for the director of NSA as his liaison to the chief of staff of the Air Force 4 years. I worked for the director of CIA in did Camp David negotiations. So, I mean, I understand intelligence at the top. Some stuff is never going to be released.
All right. Yeah, Mr. Diplomat, sir, if you don't mind, what are we doing here? Why are we keeping this stuff?
Well, I mean, we could be here another day or two trying to answer that because, again, when you're the issue of the families, I mean, and we ran into this quite often when I was at the Pentagon, if you have a large number of people involved in a loss and some families want to go one direction, some families want to go the other, you have to respect the family's wishes, unfortunately, regardless of the angst and trouble that it might cause. Even without the McCain amendment, if a family doesn't want certain information released as a government official, you're obliged to honor that, and that does make the job more difficult. I mean, admittedly, on the issue of classification, having been in government having spent over 50 years in government, I can tell you that. I mean, that's something that causes most of us government people to have gray hairs because things get classified. It's easy to classify something, or at least it was when I was in government, and it's hard to declassify. In terms of intelligence activities, I think Bill's right. I mean, some of this stuff will never be declassified. There are things that I did during my military career that I have, my wife knows absolutely nothing about, and I can never tell her. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fact. We have
just
to live with that. But there, what we need to do is understand that these restrictions are always going to be there, and we need to find creative ways to work around them.
So do those exist, Bill? Do creative ways around them exist?
Here's one of the other problems: is work overload at DPAA. Now, the guy in charge of the case that I'm most familiar with tells me that he has about 4 hours a year to devote to that case because of his workload of all of the other cases. All right, that's a problem. It's a real problem. That's how you get more people working on more cases, maybe. But that's a management problem. But it's a family problem. The people and the families out there, they don't see results. They think they're not being cared for. Now, some of these analysts started with bad assumptions based on a lack of information. The assumption that they wrote down in 1968 or 1986 is still being touted today as this is what happened to Charles when he was out there on patrol. No, that's not right. In the meantime, we have found other answers, but that still remains on the books. So there's an annual report that is given to all the families at the Washington meeting. Now, last year, in 2016, I spent 4 days with the government. We went through this stuff line by line. At the end of that 4 days, they had not gotten anything new that they were willing to publish, but they all knew that we had discovered truth. We had a secret meeting next month in July of 2016. It went 7 hours on one case, and that proved conclusively the new information was valid. They admitted it, they agreed to it, and so on. So when the 2017 report comes out to the families, it isn't in there. Why wasn't it in there?
Okay, that's it. Now you've gotten us to where I want us to get. Why wasn't it in there? Why are we not telling families everything we know when we know it, or even when we think we know it? And I understand some of that, but I've got a widow out there right now. Think she is, or he, or a son, hadn't seen his father, who wants the answer. When we come back, let's see if we can get closer to that. And I appreciate you, gentlemen. We'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
Our special edition of this Veterans Day show continues along with my guest, former Lieutenant Colonel William R. Peterson, who flew 20 missions in northern Laos and Vietnam, and Ambassador Charles Ray, who dealt with far too many cases of people missing, and he didn't have answers to the loved ones. Let's continue.
Okay. That's a valid question. Why not tell the family member everything you know? Yeah. Well, I mean, for the analyst, it's not that simple because they are part of a hierarchy, and of course they have their instructions. There might be classifications. You have this issue of the privacy, and so quite often they cannot tell a family member something that they know, and that has to be worked around. But that's an interesting issue because I faced that when I took the job as Deputy Assistant Secretary responsible for this mission. Recognizing that you can't always tell people everything that you know, or you certainly aren't going to be able always to tell them what they want to hear. But what I spent a lot of time doing, and this is an interesting point, I think a lot of bureaucrats and a lot of people even in this doing this mission miss, is that quite often what the family wants closure. There's no argument there. And this is even far back as losses during World War II. I once met a man who never knew his father, who died in World War II or went missing a month before he was born, mm-hmm. and I looked him in the eye. He and I are same age, and I could see the sense of loss, the sense of not quite completeness in him because of that. These people have this void in their lives that not knowing the disposition, the fate of their loved one has created. If you recognize that, then what you need to focus on is you tell them what you can tell them, but you also acknowledge their loss. And this is something, frankly, that I think, you know, an overworked bureaucrat can easily forget. I mean, someone who's working 100 cases might not feel he has the energy left to to empathize right. with the person right. across the desk from him. And that was sort of my job. Yeah. And as head of the organization, my job,
head.
Well, I mean,
he's sitting here saying, yeah, you know, you're up here reading papers. I'm down here reading faces. I mean.
But see, this is my point, is that when I sat in that chair, I wasn't up there reading papers. I was down there with the families. I spent probably 30% of my time interacting with family members. Listening to their issues, solving them when I could, explaining to them when I couldn't exactly why I couldn't.
Go ahead, Bill.
Let me give you an example, and this may hurt a little bit. On October 25th in 2006, there was a fate determination board. A number of officers gathered together, and they are going to determine the designation a missing person will carry from that point on. Mm-hmm. Presumably up to that point, there was a cloud, there was a question, they didn't know. They know he wasn't accounted for. So now they're going to go before the board. The board is given information, packages are presented to them. They study the packages, they debate it, they discuss it, they ask if there's anything else, and they come to a conclusion. This guy was killed. We're going to call him KIA, body not returned. Now, in the case that I am working day and night on for the last 12 years, four people were called killed, body not returned. I have an eyewitness who has given 16 pages of written testimony who was there during the 4.5-hour firefight. When I gave that to the government in June of 2016, it was accepted. We discussed it for 7 hours, and then it disappeared in 2017, where it should be in the annual report, in the family conference report. It never appeared. It never happened.
Wow. How was that possible?
And my point being that of the 16 people on that mountain, four were rescued and lived. One was rescued but was killed in the helicopter and got the Medal of Honor from the president, from President Obama later, obviously. But there are four people who were designated KIA, body not returned, when in fact they were MIA. And as recently as last week, I found evidence of where that one person was. He was a quarter of a mile south of the battle. He'd been carried there by three friendlies. The Hmong people who were on our side defending that mountain carried him as far as they could, but he was too big and too heavy to go any further. So they carried him for a quarter of a mile, and he was left in a location, and he was alive. He was wounded in two places, but not dying.
Prove it.
I've got the data.
Prove it. Can you prove it?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what you face, right?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a point here.
Okay, hold a point. You can make that. Let me pay the bill again. Every once in a while I have to do that. All right, we'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Family Finance. I am your host, Paul Berry. My guests are Charles Ray, ambassador to Zimbabwe and Cambodia, and a longtime servant to the military in Vietnam. And then next to him is Lieutenant Colonel William Peterson, who today is still flying jets, at least in his mind. And I would have, you know what? I would have loved to have been his wingman. And when you say that to a man, that's about as much as good as it can get.
I'd love to
have been your wingman, sir. Okay, we got a few minutes. Go ahead.
I want to go back to
quickly
you raise
now.
A question.
Yeah,
prove it.
Okay. Yeah.
In my hand, I have a report from the office that Charles was the director of, and it's one of thousands of intelligence reports, and I happened across it this week. All right, and I read it. I went back to a GS-15 who is a brilliant analyst and a linguist. He's an award-winning linguist of Vietnamese. Anyway, and I asked him about this, and he confirmed. He said, I never saw that report before. He said, I absolutely agree with it. And so, therefore, we did have four MIAs on the 11th of May, 1968,
right,
in northern Laos. That's a big problem. We're dealing with it. Okay, we're working on it. But here's the other one. Prove it. He asked me to check into another report. I did. And it turns out that I called up the last survivor of this battle in Colorado, and I said, okay, I want you to think about a police lineup. And I gave him five guys. The lineup, he knows these guys personally. He served in combat with them. And I gave him these five names. One of the names was a guy I suspected of being the subject of this intelligence report. He identified him immediately by name. And now we know a name, we know a location, we know where he was, when he was wounded, how he was wounded, and has nothing to do with the official report that was given to the families as late as June of this year.
Does that do it for you?
Well, that is very interesting and compelling evidence. But I'd like to go back and address the other issue, which sort of got slid over.
Okay.
And that is the status determination. And this, by the way, while it is frustrating for the families, it's equally frustrating for the analysts of this organization. And it goes back to what I have been harping on is bureaucracy. The status determinations are not done by DPAA. They're not done by the agency that is responsible for accounting. They are done by the services. The Army has a board that meets to determine status, the Navy, the Air Force, and so on. And I worked as a senior defense official for 3 years, and I'll have to say, quite honestly, I'm not sure I totally understood the thought processes that went into status determinations. They were a bit opaque and somewhat arcane, so I go back to the same issue, is that you're dealing with a bureaucracy. It doesn't always do it right. Quite often it does it completely wrong in terms of answering people's questions. But if you go back to these bureaucrats who make these status determinations, they could probably quote you chapter and verse the regulations that justify what they did. I'm not saying that's right. I don't necessarily agree with it. It just is.
It's what is.
So what this organization has to then focus on is perception management and to let the people who aren't getting the answers they want know, look, I understand what you're saying. I feel your pain, if you want to use that. It's not going to make them happy. And it's certainly not going to answer their questions, but it goes a long way to acknowledging their grief. And my sense is that there's a lack of that
going on
currently.
Last words to you, to Bill.
Well, I write a blog. It has to do with this subject.
All right, what's your blog?
And so on. It's the Thailand Laos Cambodia Brotherhood, and I am the chairman for the Vietnam War Commemoration. But what I wanted to say was the last line in the blog that I wrote last night had to do with this meeting today, and I said it is my hope, my desire, that the outcome of this meeting is that I will meet somebody who can help me advance the cause of this case and all the other cases in DPAA by taking a diplomat on the one hand and a former warrior on the other and seeing if we can't work together and move forward. There's somebody you know out there that can help. I know that. And we just have to find that person.
As a radio host and as a journalist, I operate under the one theory that I think is so important. My job is not to tell you what to think. My job is to tell you what to think about. So wherever you are out there tonight, think about Veterans Day from this perspective. And to all of those who have lost a loved one and not sure, God bless you. We pray for you. We think about you. And we care about you. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Come back and see us again.
Great.
Al Peterson, as always, thank you. Our engineer, this is Paul Berry. Have a good day.